Now, the award-winning investigative journalist Nicola Tallant brings Crime World live show Omerta to Munro's Live. I've admired her writing for many, many years, but Nicola joins me on the line today. Nicola, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining. I've admired your honesty in writing when it comes to, each and every thug around the country, to be quite honest. But you're bringing Omerta. Will you tell, what does that stand for, Omerta?
Well, Omerta is really the sort of the secret code of the underworld, where you never speak to authorities about crime, or you never sort of tell on anybody, you never turn on anybody. And essentially it is, I suppose, the backbone of the entire Regency trial and what happened to Jerry the Monk Hutch when he was betrayed by one of his own. So it's a kind of a two-part show. And the first would be just myself on the stage discussing and sort of travelling through what this Omerta means, where it came from, the origins of it, and bringing it kind of into real life situations. And then the second half is a live podcast where I have some quite interesting footage over the past couple of weeks that's kicked up over the course of the job, along with all sorts of other conversation with Niall Donald, who's my regular on the Crime World podcast with me.
And do you ever worry for yourself? I mean, you don't have to worry down in Munro's because you'll be well looked after. But I mean, I said I admired your writing. You're brave because these lads don't kind of hang around.
Yeah, I mean, look, journalists, crime journalists through, you know, over the decades have, you know, there are times when, you know, you can irritate somebody and you might get a little warning that things aren't great. But by and large, you know, it's quite a safe country to work in, actually. And I think by and large, a lot of criminals just see the crime journalists as being slightly pesky, very annoying, a little bit irritating, but ultimately just doing their job, I suppose, in the same way that you have Gardaí, solicitors, you know, people working in social services and all the rest of it. It's really just kind of seen as part of the machinations that, you know, surround their lives and everybody else's. So it probably on the outside looks to be a bit of a crazy job, a crazy career. But while doing it, it just becomes pretty normal and natural. Mm. And maybe I'm odd, who knows?
Oh, sure. Look, I think in every journalist, there's things a bit of oddness or a bit of crackedness. Certainly.
True.
And there has to be for you to survive, because if you took everything too seriously, it would be a very miserable life one would be leading. Can I take you through, though? I mean, when you talk about Omerta, I mean, when you see what happened during that trial recently, and you referred to it there, I mean, that's out the window now. So it is in that regard where Jonathan Dowdall did what he did. But look, that's to be fought on another day, I suppose. But Will you be touching on those? Often, you know, you write on the paper, but then with libel and slander, you have to be very careful. But at a public event like this, can you throw guts and all out there?
Oh, very much so. You know, because I mean, the fact of the matter is that Regency spectacular, you know, attempt to murder Daniel Kinahan, which happened in February of 2016, like that whole thing and what's happened since has been all about the trust of that group that went in there to take on a cartel, you know, and it's all about them not speaking and keeping quiet and all the people that surrounded that, you know, the getaway drivers, the people who provided the safe houses, every one of them stayed silent and kept that circle of trust until Jonathan Dowdall broke. And the result of that was just incredible, to be sitting there in the courtroom to feel the tension. You know, people who don't maybe attend courtrooms too frequently don't realise they're pretty small rooms. So, you know, you have somebody like Dowdall who has gone state witness and who is telling the authorities and telling the nation really that the monk is a killer. He's sitting just a couple of metres away from the monk. And of course, the court didn't believe what he had to say or accept his evidence, which resulted in those incredible scenes when the monk walked free from the Special Criminal Court just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So yes, all of that and the psyche behind that, you know, the reasons that exists, that why it's so necessary for there to be those circles of trust within the criminal underworld. You know, what happens when it breaks and what are the consequences? Because, of course, it's a world unlike ours, that if you break trust, you might be, you know, there could be a cold shoulder, or you could be ignored. But in that world, it's really a matter of life or death.
So on the night in question that you're going to be in Munro's, it's going to be Friday the 19th of May, which is a good night indeed for something like this. Friday the 19th of May. They can, what Omerta is what we've spoken about, but there'll be more added to it from there. And the podcast then, you're doing that live, and then will you just podcast it then from Munro's? It'll be recorded live.
Well, so we did the first show of it. We're doing a tour. The first show was in the Olympia last Thursday night, which was sold out. An incredible experience, to be honest with you. Like, the Olympia is just a huge venue in Dublin. And to be standing on that stage, looking out at every seat filled, was extraordinary. To think the podcast really started at my kitchen table with a small microphone, myself and my producer, wondering what we were going to do and if anybody had any interest in this old crime stuff. So the podcast has just grown and grown since then. And it's, you know, it is really doing extremely well. There's 250,000 streams a week on it. I kind of do all sorts of content. The gangland stuff, a lot of the organised crime stuff is very, very popular. But we'll also sort of dip into the social issues around crime, about the community work that's going on out there, and try and keep it very varied. But yeah, I mean, the second half of the show, the first half, I suppose, is an interactive experience where there'll be visuals and audios and myself on the stage telling the story of Omerta, what it is and what's happened since the Regency and within that circle of trust that the monk developed around him. The second half is a little bit more entertaining, a bit more lighthearted, where we'll be just using a lot of video footage and that kind of funny little moments that people haven't seen. So yeah, it's a little bit of a mix of the series, and we're also trying to find the balance, recognizing of course within crime there's victims and there's a lot of heartache and sadness, but trying to find a place where you can also have a little bit of a laugh. So it's a fine balance, the whole thing.
Where can they get tickets? Is it Munro's website or what website?
Munro's website, exactly.
So go to Munro's,
Munro's website. And I'm looking forward to having been in that venue. I believe it's a fabulous venue.
Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. I mean, depending on
what God, don't say that. No, I'll
feel
sick
no pressure
say that.
At all. No, Nicola, it's about... I know we've a gang coming in from America to use the facility in October.
And, right.
That could take up to 1,000 people, depending.
Oh, stop it now. I'm going to be rolling around the bed at night with that. I'm not able for that. I had visions of it being a nice little intimate venue that I'd be able to see everybody in front of me.
Depends on what parts of... You could be in the small bar, so you could down there. Yeah. They could put you in the big bar and they could put you anywhere.
One way or another, it's a great venue. Yeah, so that's great. It's great to be coming to Galway. And the reaction has been huge already in Galway. I looked at the sales there a couple of weeks ago and it was flying. So that's brilliant, you know, because obviously, look, crime is not just a phenomenon that's all about Dublin anymore. Those days are well and truly gone. I think everybody around the country realises that it's filtered into every rural town and village, you know, and the prominence of cocaine, which has fuelled an awful lot of the violence and an awful lot of the growth in organised crime over the past 10 years. There is not a corner of Ireland that has been missed by this or that isn't affected by it. So
I think that's
reflective in the tour.
We have it in Galway, so we do as well. Nicola, maybe you'll do a few podcasts just from certain areas in Galway. We can tell you where to go and then you can do them from there then as well.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I'm always interested in any content, by the way, if anybody's listening that thinks that they have, you know, information or they're working in the communities in any areas. I'm always interested in content from around the country. The more varied, the better.
All right, Nicola, well done to you. Munros.ie for further details. Or if you meet Gary out and about, he'll have tickets in his back pocket as well. But a great venue, and Nicola Tennant is going to be there on Friday, May the 19th. If you want to get in contact with us, you can do so today quite simply on 086 38 33 55 3. You're all wondering, have I got a flu or a cold? I don't. It's hay fever. So don't worry about it. It's pure hay fever, I promise you. That's all it is. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. Comment lines are open.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Click and collect allows you to collect your order whenever suits you.
Now, yet to come on the programme, by the way, Keith Barry joins us shortly. Stay tuned for that. He's coming to Galway with his Mind Games programme, and we'll give you details on that too shortly. First off, Dave McCarthy sits opposite me. Dave, morning to you. How are you today?
Very good, thanks. Very well, Keith, very well. And it's a beautiful sunny morning.
Absolutely, yeah, but the sun has gone in just since you came into studio. Come here, just as quite a few questions in today. Somebody just said to us, it's been a sad week, 187 years. Ulster Bank has closed. Will the credit unions fill the gap? Have they all closed now at this stage?
Yeah.
They're all closed.
They're, all the branches are closed. And it is a sad time, really, to see a bank that has been here for 187 years. It's right across the island of Ireland, and it has been part of, I suppose, Irish society right through some tumultuous times in our history. But to see a bank abandon us, which is what this is, really, we won't go into the reasons behind it because they're irrelevant now. It is. And it reduces competition, as we know, dramatically. We now really only need three banks in the country, Ulster Bank, or AIB, Bank of Ireland, and Permanent TSB. And therein, I think, lies the opportunity, and we've spoken before about this, is that I think the credit unions really come into focus here as being an alternative, not a bank, but an alternative financial provider. I don't think I'd like to see the credit unions go the way of being a full bank, because they have a different ethos, and I think they should keep that. And I think there's great opportunity for them and to expand their services further. And there's a lot of goodwill amongst the public towards them. I, in my previous life, many, many years ago, you'll recollect, worked for an organization called the TSB Bank, became Permanent TSB.
Yeah.
But that had an ethos that was similar in one sense to a credit union. It wasn't privately owned. And I thought that particular bank could really have developed into something very different, but didn't go that route and became part of Permanent TSB. So I think the credit unions definitely, hopefully, will fill a void, because we're not going to see any provider coming into this country again in the future. Yeah. I don't see there's going to be an opportunity that's commercially viable for them to do that.
But like the likes of Revolut apparently are making huge inroads.
You're going to have the likes of those online specialist providers.
Are they regulated by...
Oh, they are. They're regulated across. Yeah, they are. There's no issue with that. But you're going to see these specialist providers like that. But that's all they are. They're specialists. They're not fully fledged banks in the sense of what we need. And we do need full operational banks with branches. I mean, dare I say it, you know, with the day of requiring still a physical presence to go in and visit, as anybody listening this morning, is really important. We can't live our lives online altogether.
No, we can't. Now, over the weekend and last week, when you see what happened to JP Morgan, then does that send the frighteners across the bow of some other people?
No. I mean, look, there was a bank that had problems, and it got sorted out with the Federal Reserve and the FDIC, which is the regulator when it comes to banking in the US, and it's now been taken over by JP Morgan. So, you know, anybody listening this morning, don't be concerned about the stability of the banks in this country.
Okay. Somebody else was on to us. I'm 45. Do you think it's a good idea to take out an AVC?
An AVC?
You've answered this a few times for this
person. I do, but I keep getting asked the same question by different people.
Why?
Because I think it's one of these things that people think for some reason that they're unsure as to whether or not they should take the step and move into making contributions into an AVC. I suppose it's getting us back to, as you well know, Keith, the whole kind of, I suppose, conundrum that people feel about pensions. But yes, an AVC is a fantastic way of topping up your pension. Obviously, money that you put into it doesn't become available until you retire at your normal retirement date, but you get full tax relief on it. And it's the only thing out there that you'll ever make a contribution to or make a payment into that'll give you full tax relief, subject to certain limitations. So from that point of view, you know, if you're on 40% and you put in €100, it only costs you 60. So it's very tax efficient, and ultimately at the end of the day, it could be very beneficial to you when you retire.
Somebody else said, is it possible, and we spoke about this last week, but it's back in again this week, is it possible that there will be a change in inheritance tax thresholds, as my surviving two children will have to sell my house when I die to pay the tax due?
Well, the first thing about that, listener, I would
just say...
Must
be an expensive house.
Well, it depends. Not really. If you think of the threshold, it's 335,000. So that means that house has to be worth more than 670,000. And there could be other assets there. All I will just say is, and it is no, I suppose, consolation, and not to answer your question properly, is it depends on what the threshold is at the time when you die. Okay? So hopefully it will have risen and maybe they won't have to do that. But the other part of their question, is it possible that there will be a change in the thresholds? anything's possible, but the way the government has been looking at and Department of previous ministers for finance about increasing the threshold for inheritance tax has not, I suppose, inspired me with confidence. I mean, back in the day, prior to the financial downturn, it was $500,000. And we've seen property prices increase dramatically. So, to be honest, depending on how many people, how many children are in the family and the size of the estate, it's not that difficult for some estates, you know, given the fact that the property values have increased, to maybe breach that and then force yourself into a situation where you do have to pay a significant tax bill.
And another caller was on to us today. Car transactions, they said, have been revealed. Is it true that we're spending more on home and garden than anything else?
Yeah, there were some statistics came out last week to show that we are spending a lot more of our money on home, which means obviously house repairs, house improvements, house goods, whatever, and our garden. We're putting a lot of money into our home. This is a statistic that came through from Visa. And I suppose it's encouraging to think that people really are beginning to spend some of the money that they're sitting on, because as we know, there's an enormous amount of money on deposit in this country. And spending is good for the economy. It's good for instilling growth into the economy. And all you have to do is look at the US. What is the thing that they focus on most when they're looking at how the economy is performing? What is the consumer spending? Mm. And spend for them is the recipe for economic success, and has shown it to be that way in the past. So it's good for us, yeah. People unlocking the funds that they have, yeah, and putting it into creating jobs and, you know, spending in the economy. So that's a very positive sign. Oh.
Somebody else wants to know, what taxes apply to money made on an investment?
Okay, two things
on
that.
It depends on what the investment is.
It does. The first one, if it's a unit-linked investment, which is through a life insurance fund, you pay a 1% levy to the government when you go in. So in other words, there's 1% taken off you. If you put in 10,000, they take 1%, so there's €100 gone off that. Then when you come out of that particular investment, any gains you make are 41%, so it's quite onerous. The other type of investments that are out there, things like we call structured products, there is no levy going in, and the tax is on any gain in those investments is a capital gains tax, which is only 33%. And there is also a threshold where you can earn up to 2,500 plus as a married couple and pay no tax on that part. So basically, you will pay anywhere from 33 to 41% depending on the individual investment and what it is, and you will pay a levy of 1% on one of them and not on the other.
Mm. All right, Ted McCarthy from McCarthy & Associates, thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. And somebody else is asking about deposit rates. Why is it so low here? They're not low in other European countries, is that true?
Well, it is, because lack of competition. There's nobody forcing the existing banks to increase the rates. I mean, across Europe, you can get much higher deposit rates than here. The second part of that is that we basically have no desire, it seems, to shout about the deposit rates the banks have given us. And they're sitting on so much deposit money, there is no motivation for them to start paying us for what we have on deposit. It's a frustrating situation, and it looks like as if we're going to continue to be out of step with the rest of Europe, where our friends across the EU are getting some sort of realistic returns on deposits, and we're not.
Okay, Dave McCarthy, McCarthy & Associates, thank you for joining us today. Further details from McCarthy & Associates and World Key on 0915-660-22. Dave, thank you for joining us today on the programme. Quick commercial break, and Keith Barry joins us. He's coming to Galway next. Brace yourself.
Galway Tones, in association with Tesco. Find our award-winning Irish ranges in store and online at tesco.ie.
A
very good morning to you. Welcome into the programme. Anything can happen between now and 12 midday. Keith Barry is in town with us, and he's flying all over the world, so he is. Is it true, by the way, for such an intelligent man, that you left your swimming trunks behind you this morning?
Yeah, so I always have the swimming trunks in the back of the car, because I'll get into any kind of water if I deem it clean enough. So I'll jump into a lake, I'll jump into the sea if I can. So I got up early enough, drove out to Salt Hill. Do you know what I love about Salt Hill? Wow. I'll tell you, just as a side note, and I've been coming here, as you know, for many years, and I lived in Galway for 4 years. Everyone's smiling and everyone's ready to say hello. So I was chatting to people out there, and then I realised, yep, yeah, I've forgotten my togs. So I apologise to anybody who saw a pasty white brain hacker, a white, no, as in, you know, the farmer's tan.
Who's coming to Galway on the 27th of May, by the way. Go on, yeah.
Yeah, the farmer's tan brain hacker going in his white fronts today in Salt Hill. So I did, got in, had a nice swim, and here we are.
I hate to ask this question, but what are you currently wearing inside now?
Well, there you go. Commando is the way forward. Dare I say it, commando.
Listen, you're coming to town on the 27th. It's the last, 27th of May. And it's going to be the last gig of the year, you say, is it?
Is it. Yeah, it's the last Mind Games ever. So I've done about 15 Mind Games. And I decided purposely just to do 15 shows. And this is the final one. So I'll have a couple of drinks, a bit of a party night that night when the show is over. So look, I'm really excited to get up to the Black Box again. Mind Games is the, dare I say it, the funniest show I've ever written. So this is like belly laugh stuff. Mm. And there's various reasons for that. And I kind of want to keep a lot of the content a secret because the, 14 audiences so far have kept the content a secret. In other words, they haven't spoken about the show after the show. But what I will say is, look, it's packed full of mentalism, mind reading, mind games. If you like magic, you'll enjoy the show. If you like mind reading, you'll enjoy the show. And if you like comedy, you'll enjoy the show. And I do put, Keith, every single night, €15,000 on the line for the skeptics. So I have a game called Beat the Brain Hacker. So if a skeptic can beat me, they win €15,000. Yeah. And the money can be won. So a lot of people think, oh, I bet you the money can't be won. Actually, over the course of Mind Games, 14 shows so far, various amounts have been won. Various nights, not every night, but up to €300 so far has been won. So that you can win up to 15 grand, but you have to beat me first.
You're a big spender. Now we've got a willing, an unwilling victim here is John Morley. Now he survived an outside broadcast in Merview last Friday. So what are you doing here? And you can pick on me then as well if you want us.
Yeah, I'll definitely.
Why have you got a fish hook in your hand?
Well, this is the interesting thing. So I've labelled these, right? So you can see we've got a green. So let me describe to the audience there first. One of the stickers fell off, but we'll deal with that in a moment. So I've got a fish hook. And there are, I think it's 5 strings going up to the fish hook, right? And you can see they're all labelled. So we've got green, we've got red, pink, I suppose. So green, pink, we've got orange, blue, and actually the two green should be there like that. And then this one here is yellow. So the unmarked one there is yellow. So you can see we've got different colours going to different strings, basically. And in a moment, you, sir, are going to pull some strings. I will tell you, Keith, one of these strings is tied to the fish hook. That's the game. The others are not tied to the fish hook. And at this moment in time, you can't tell which one is tied, can you?
No.
No. Now, I will also note, I've got a piece of paper here. See, that's a piece of paper near my driver's license. We'll get to that in a moment. Yeah, that's important too, just so you know. Yeah. So the game is this. Have we ever met before, by the way?
No.
What's your name?
John.
Okay, John. You're going to go fishing, John.
Okay.
Now, when you go fishing, John, I want you to really go fishing. So, in a moment, you're going to be pulling some strings. Yeah. You're going to pull them one at a time.
John.
Okay, and John, when you pull, I don't want you to give it a little tug. I want you to yank as hard as you can. Okay, that's the game. You're going to pull four in total, and you're going to leave one of the strings. Okay, so as you can see, we've got all different colors there. So, there's two colors together there, so we'll just make sure that we know that this one here is the green one. All right, so you can see them there. Now, what I didn't tell you is the fish hook is going to be in my mouth. Now, this is a treble hook. So this is designed, I'm a fisherman, by the way, I love fishing. This is designed that if it goes into a fish's mouth, there's barbs on it. You can see there's little barbs there. If this goes into a fish's mouth, it's not coming out, right? You're going to catch that fish. Mm. If this gets stuck in my mouth, this will be the end of my interview and I'll be straight off to
I was just about to say, from a health and safety point of view, John, just I'm going to video this. So,
So I'll wait for you to get the camera on and then the fish hook will indeed go in my mouth. So one of these is tied tightly, I might add, to the fish hook and you are about to go fishing. For this moment onwards, I won't be able to talk. Okay. One string at a time, choose wisely. My job is to try and influence you away, of course, from the string that is tied tightly to the hook. Here we go. Going fishing.
So it's in his mouth, so it is now.
Okay, let's go.
The ego over there, so yeah.
Right, we're going to go for this one here, I think. I'll just... Yeah. So 3, 2, 1. Okay, that's that one done. That's the orange one done. We'll try the... We'll try this one here, I think. Okay, it's the pink one. Okay, pink one's okay. He's still alive.
I feel it every time you pull it.
Oh, we'll go this one here, the yellow one.
Be careful.
Oh! And he's still alive. And there's two left, green and blue. We'll have to go for the blue, maybe.
Sure. Change your mind, or you're happy.
Do you want me to change my mind?
Your choice.
We'll go blue.
One, two, three.
Leaving, of course, one green one tied to the fish hook. And I did mention there's a piece of paper in here. What's interesting about this piece of paper is, I'll open this up, and can you read out loud, please, if you don't mind, exactly what it says?
John.
I will influence you to avoid, and it's the green colour.
Green, which is exactly what you do. You avoided green, and thank you so much for doing that.
No hassle. Okay.
So I've recorded that on your phone now, so that's there, so he didn't hurt himself.
Yeah, you've evidence.
There was a story I was told over the weekend, by the way, about somebody who was hurt, but I can't tell it on air. I'll tell it to you off air, so I will in a minute. But like, I felt the wheelie, the shakes there with that now.
Well, the question you have to ask, you were about to say the willies, I can say the willies for you. You want to see the face on Keith right now. So here's the thing, Keith. Would you have chosen the same order as John, do you think?
I don't know, but I wouldn't have pulled the strings. I would have been afraid that the hook would get caught and we'd be in trouble. And
I was going for it.
Yeah, but I have no music lined up here or nothing.
So John, I have this game I want to play with you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, John, I want you to think way back to the very first crush you ever had.
Oh, okay. Sweet God, don't ask that question.
The first secret crush. Don't tell us.
Just it has to be like a real person or a celebrity or...
It can be either. Real person, celebrity, whoever you want. Don't even give us any clues. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we will need evidence for this because very often on the radio people might... we don't know. John could lie. He might tell the truth. So just to make sure we have evidence, I've got a fold-up index card here. Now you can't see what I've written inside there, can you?
No, I can't.
Okay. Inside here, I simply have, I'm thinking of. So whoever it is that you're thinking of, John, just so we have evidence, you're going to print the name clearly there, okay? And then you're going to fold it up like this. My initials are back on the outside. That way you'll know I can't see what it is that you've written. While you're doing that, by the way, I'm going to stare directly at Keith. You're my human blindfold right now to make sure I can't see what John is writing. And once again, during Mind Games, by the way, don't forget, May 27th in the Black Box. Tickets are selling fast.
THT.ie.
THT.ie. In Mind Games.
Bring your fourth teeth with you.
I have this experiment where I got to brainwash the whole audience at the end of the show. But you'll have to come to see what that's all about. Grab the pen, John, because I want you to put your own initials on the piece of paper to make sure that I can't pickpocket it or take it off you in any way. Fold it up. I don't want to touch the piece of paper. Fold it up a couple of times. So right now you're thinking of somebody that me, Keith, and nobody else could know. However, this is the mind game right now. You're going to tell me who that is, but you're going to tell me without speaking. So look at me, just focus on this person, focus on who it is, and just focus on the first name to begin with. Okay, just the person's first name. Think of the spelling of the first name and think of the last letter of the spelling, the last letter of the first name. Can you do that for me?
Yeah.
Okay, don't tell me what that is, but if you can, maybe you can't, but if you can, think of an animal starting with that letter. Are you able to do that?
Yeah.
Now, did you notice he looked up to the top left? That's known as a visual recall. And you visually recall because you looked up and you gestured with your shoulders, a large land-based animal, so it's not a cat or a dog. Did you just think of an elephant?
No.
No? Interesting. Okay, that's called attention diffuser. I didn't even care what the animal was. Okay, look at me because this is a female, this is a blonde female, is that correct?
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah, I can tell. See, that's the tension to future. By the way, what animal did you think? Just tell us the animal.
Rabbit.
A rabbit. Interesting. You're not good, I'll tell you now. He's not good at taking instructions. Do you know why that is? You see, I said that I focus on the last letter of the first name. What he did is he did that in reverse. He focused on the first letter of the last name, so I now know that the first letter is an R. Look at me, focus on the spelling of the second name right now. Focus on the spelling of the second name. Think of how many letters are in the second name. He's looking up at the top right. He's having to think right now, so it's like 7 or 8 letters or even more than that. Okay, look at me. Ah, yes, I can see inside your brain right now. You're watching her movie. You're watching a movie. She's kind of slight and small. You're watching one of her, and we won't go there, but you had a bit of a, you had a moment, and the moment you had was involving Reese Witherspoon.
Wow.
Was that it?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Is that the truth now?
I swear to God.
And you're about 13 at the time.
Stop.
Okay, what thought did he have?
That's for late night radio. Late night radio. We won't go there.
I have never worked with such a magnet.
Do you want the proof, by the way? It's folded up.
Oh, you can open it up if you want to. You have the evidence, as they say.
I have never seen such a woman magnet in all my lifetime, but anyway.
There you go, Keith. There's your proof.
Reese, what is this one? Is that Reese?
I don't know.
I can't even read his writing. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty bad.
Wow. See?
Jeez.
That's why I asked you to come in.
I'm a believer.
Because I'd make a mess of it, so what?
Oh, I like the way you said, well, let's test you. I'm going to test you. Look, I've got two books here.
I can't swear here now, can I?
your show, your choice. So here's the thing. Look, I've two of the best known books, okay, known to man.
The Shining, yes, I've read, and I've read Harry Potter.
Oh, you've read, this is good then. Yeah. You've read both of them. Yeah. Did you know, by the way, there's about 190,000 words in each book. So, collectively, here in front of us, we've got, I don't know, about 380,000 words. Now, the reason we're using these books is very often, if you ask somebody to think of a word, for example, not always, but very often, they'll go to kind of the first 100 most common words. And people often say that to me. Oh, does everybody think of Reese Witherspoon? No. Does everybody think of tomato? No. Oh. So let's randomize this. And this is, by the way, if you're listening, if you're creating a new password, what they advise you to do, the securities, is they advise you to grab a book, open it up, and think of a really long word. Because then it's random. It's not related to you. You're not thinking of your brother or your sister or your son, so on. So, First of all, you're going to choose a book. Whichever one you choose is the one you use.
I take Harry Potter.
Oh, notice why he immediately went for Harry Potter. I don't know if you noticed that I gestured quite considerably with Harry Potter.
Take The Shining, then.
Well, no, you don't have to. I mean, you don't have to.
Give me The Shining.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing. In a moment, you'll open up the book. You can browse through it, of course, if you want to. It is just a book. But I don't want you to think of a name, okay? So names are too obvious. So forget names and places, because there's only a few of those in there. Mm-hmm. So we want this to be challenging for both me and John, because John's going to get involved in this. So here's what I want you to do. In a moment, you'll open up the book and think of a long, challenging word. Now, when I say long, think of like 1, 8, 9, 10, 11 letters. There'll be loads of them in there, but a really long, challenging word, as long as you can. Okay, you go to any page you want, look down the book, not a name, and let us know when you've got a word in mind.
Yeah, do I write it down?
No, you can just memorize it and close the book up.
No, I have to keep the book.
You know, well, you can keep it up open if you wish to, but I might see it. So you can close it up.
No.
Once you can memorize the word, that's all that matters. Okay, you're dying to write it down, but I don't want to see what you write. So
just
remember the word. That's all you have to do. Okay, now look at me. Okay, now focus on the word as a whole. Okay, and here's what I want you to do: focus on the first letter, just the first letter of the word. Okay, and I'm just going to scribble down just lightly on the bottom of this what I believe the first. Look at me: ZYXWVUTSRQPONMLKJHDFEDCB. Okay, I'll just write down a letter there. Okay, but John, I want you to get involved in this. I want you to look at Keith, and I want you to decipher what you think the first letter of the long word might be. Okay, your choice now. What do you think the first letter? Don't guess now. Really try and get inside his head. Okay, what do you think the first letter of the long word is? Go ahead. When you
just guess it. T.
Was it a T? No. Good guess, but wrong. Okay, this is not guessing. This is knowing. Okay, what is the first letter? Just so he knows he's wrong.
D.
D. Now, was there any way I could have known that it was a D?
Don't know.
What did I write down?
P.
No, well, that's a D. Oh, D. Okay, but I want you to focus on the second letter, okay? Mm-hmm. Focus on the second letter. ZYXW, my marker dropped there, I believe. Focus on the second letter, ZYXWVUTS, 180,000 words in the book. The second letter, I'm going to go with an E, is that correct? No, yeah. an I.
Okay,
yeah?
Perfect.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, look at me. 180,000 words. I'm not going to fish. I'm just going to go for one word and one word only, because you said it in your head there. Okay. So I'm going to go with that word there. Okay. I am committed. I've written down a word. I could be wrong, by the way, but I'm just going to go for it. Okay. For the first time, name out loud. What was your word?
Disquieting.
Oh, wow. How did I do?
Well, you did very well.
Disquieting. There we go. My spelling isn't quite exact, but disquieting. Wow, that's an unusual
word. Take me through. How did you do that? Just tell me how you did.
I was inside your brain.
You were not inside my brain.
Oh, I was inside. There's a lot of other stuff inside that head of yours as well. Oh, yeah. I love when people ask me how I do it. I do it very well, but thank you for asking.
Disquieting. I saw disquieting there.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Look, if we show John, I mean, it's important, John, look, there's hundreds of thousands of words. You could have thought of half-heartedly, candlelight, absent-mindedly, embarrassment, unbelievable, predetermined. Like, there's tons and tons of words. Yeah. You told me without thinking. You spoke without speaking. That's how it was done, Keith.
It's just, somebody turned off my mic.
That was me with my mind.
So you're going to be in Black Box Theatre on Saturday, 27th of May. If they want to get tickets, tht.ie. So can I just ask you a very personal question? What about your poor wife at home? Are you on all the time? Or can you read her mind as well as you can read his mind and my mind?
Yeah, well, the answer is yes. However, she studied psychology up here in Galway when I was studying science. So she can block me when she chooses to because she has that psychology degree.
Need to.
Yeah, but look, I do turn it on, I turn it off, I switch it on, switch it off. But for me, it's all about, you know, having that fun factor and, you know, getting inside people's minds. But you know what the most important thing is for me? Keith, it's just transporting people into worlds.
I am listening to you, by the way. I'm doing a quick calculation here. Yeah,
but transporting people into a world where they can forget about their everyday lives, forget about your everyday problems, and go back to that childlike sense of wonder again. And honestly, for that two and a half hours, actually, you will
but
just
high
forget
intensity,
about the world.
I mean, even for, John, for you now, I mean, for you pulling those strings there was high intensity. It is high intensity. How long is the show itself then?
So first half is an hour and 10, then we take a 20-minute break and then an hour. So 2.5 hours in total. So I'm on stage at 8, finishing exactly half 10 off stage. So people can go home to the babysitters or jump on those buses or get into town for a pint.
You're back in Dublin by 12 midnight.
No, I won't be going back to Dublin. I'll be staying in the Knox Hotel having pints, so that's where you'll find me.
Is that where you're going to be?
Yeah, either in the Knox or in town.
Maybe you can bring him to Kennedy's.
Oh, might go Kennedy's.
Bring him to Kennedy's. But I mean, it is intense though. It's intense memory work for you.
Oh yeah.
Do you ever get it wrong?
Oh yeah, very often. I mean, look, you know, I'm not infallible. So people can actually Google this. Up on YouTube, there's grainy footage of me from about 15 years ago when I was on stage in the Olympia in Dublin. And I was doing an escape at the time where I was wrapped in a 100-foot of rope and my head was wrapped in a full roll of cling film. And I was trying to escape the 100-foot of rope, and you know, while I couldn't see or breathe,
film on your face,
yeah, wrapped around my head, so I couldn't see or breathe. But anyway, ultimately, I fell over in the chair that I was tied to at the time, and I winded myself, and I went to inhale, and I inhaled a whole load of cling film, and just passed out on stage in front of 1,200 people, and that was the end of the show right there. The shutters came down. Everybody thought it was part of the show. That's what I love. People always think everything is part of the show. I mean, things go wrong. You know, there was another time. I had
food poisoning. What happened that night, though?
So it just went wrong. It was an escape.
Did somebody pull off the cling film?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So when the shutters came down, Noel McHale, who I'm still working with an MCD, he literally jumped from the first balcony in the Olympia. So it was a balcony. He was watching the show from up there. So he jumped from the first balcony onto the stage. And he won't mind me saying this. He's not the smallest of creatures. So
no, he's not.
When he jumped, you know, I was more frightened for him after the fact, you know. But anyway, he came up and he popped the cling film. And look, I don't want to get into too much detail, but you know, I was getting sick and, you know, it was because I'd been passed out for not a huge amount of time, but probably 20 to 30 seconds at that stage. So it was just getting air in the windpipes and all that kind of stuff.
Who was quick enough to hit the shutters to come down and wasn't quick enough to go and poke the cling film?
Well, so you see, with my team, I do have safety mechanisms in place when I'm doing these things. So there's always three safety personnel, but I always tell any other personnel, do not come near me, no matter what happens, because they don't know if it is part of the show or not. So yeah. Ferga, who's amazing down there in the Olympia, she hit the shutter, and then, but you know, she was one of the people that I had said, look, no matter what happens, don't come out, don't try and help me. So she was following the protocol, as they say. But look, there was another time I got food poisoning before I went on the stage, and that was crazy altogether because people thought that was part of the show, and I am one of those people who says the show must go on. So I was running off stage every like 15 minutes, running to the side of stage, running back on stage, and then yeah, got a standing O, and then went up and collapsed in the dressing room, and they had to call a doctor from a festival to help me out and get a couple of injections and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, things go wrong all the time.
Listen, there's a call. Reese Witherspoon is on the call. Is on the phone to you outside.
I wish.
Will you just go? No, I meant to get in here. Trey said Reese Witherspoon. Now it could be one of the women you met in Flannery's last Friday. Yeah, yeah, Reese Witherspoon is on the phone to you outside. So go and talk to her.
It was funny though, because I must be awful open to the suggestion. Does drink impact when you're reading someone?
For them or me?
For you.
So yeah. When I'm drinking?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, for when you're trying to get a read off them if they've been drinking.
No, actually, no. Like, it doesn't. So I quite like when people have a few pints to become more open to suggestion. Yeah. Like, here's when you ask about suggestion, real fast, put out your hands like this. I know you're going to cut us off, Keith, so cut us off. Yeah, but I'm going to test him for susceptibility to hypnosis. Put out your hands like this, John. Clasp them together like this. Squeeze tightly. Put out your first fingers like this. Okay, stare at that gap and imagine there's magnets on your fingertips, pulling your fingertips closer and closer and closer together. The gap getting smaller now and smaller until eventually fingertips touch. And as you can see, Keith, he's very susceptible. So see right there? See the way his fingers move? Yeah. And you couldn't stop that. So you couldn't. So that means you're very susceptible. Yeah. So if you had drink, I'd have you knocked out in seconds. Not with my fists.
Not the only one.
That night I'd be going out with you if you can. That came out. Swear to God, if you can. Listen, thanks for joining us. Keith Barry is going to be in the Black Box Theatre. Further details can be had from tht.ie. John Morley survived another programme as producer. God knows who he's going to roll in tomorrow morning to test his skill sets. That is it for today. Thrace took all of your comments. John produced from you, Sir Keith Finnegan, until tomorrow, just after the 9 o'clock news. Do enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. And don't forget, Keith Barry, Black Box Theatre, Saturday, 27th of May, tht.ie. We're off to a meeting. I don't know which is more traumatic. Keith at that meeting. Talk to you soon.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Click and collect allows you to collect your order whenever suits you.